Good morning to all you brave souls who have made it. This morning's, the first reading kind of spoke to me because I think, I actually think there's quite a bit we can learn from this. It's in the Acts of the Apostles when, right after St. Stephen has been martyred, and it says, those who had been scattered by the persecution that arose because of Stephen went as far as Phoenicia, which is modern-day Lebanon, kind of on the coast, Cyprus, an island, in Antioch, which is in modern-day Turkey in the south, okay, but all coastal Mediterranean stuff. So what do we see? First thing we see is, and this is a recurring theme in the Acts of the Apostles, actually, the church begins to flourish, and then comes persecution, and then Christians will scatter. But the interesting thing is, well, first of all, from the scattering, then, comes evangelization. This is how the church spread. And I guess the first conclusion is when the cross and persecution affect us, especially in terms of our faith, then what is God doing? God is using that to evangelize, or at least he wants to use it to evangelize if we're docile to him. Recurring theme that I've mentioned many times and I'm sure we've talked about, but all the, you know, young adult conversions and whatnot that are happening. By the way, I mistakenly kept referring to Gen X. I'm horrible at generations. I guess I'm Gen X. So I guess it was the millennials I meant to talk about. They're the ones who get the bad rap. But anyway, for what it's worth. I honestly think, why do we have so many conversions, and I think we're going to see an uptick in vocations and whatnot? Well, I think because Christianity culturally has been under a fairly severe attack, at least in the Western countries, for a period of several years. And people, you know, humanly speaking, you say people got fed up. Okay, well, that's fine. There may be some of that. But I think more than anything is God blesses that. God uses that. And it becomes a means of evangelization. So when the cross and persecution flare up, when it's due to our faith or when it's due to defending truth or whatnot, if we look at it with the eyes of faith, I think the first question should be, okay, what does God want to do with this? That's number one. Number two, the laity intuitively understood from the very beginning that they had a mission to evangelize. They were called to evangelize. And this is something that, this is just part of being Catholic. The chief protagonist, the chief evangelist in society is not necessarily going to be the priests. I mean, yes, we have great figures like Father Mike Schmitz and Bishop Barron who have microphones and TV cameras and stuff, and they do a great job. They are great teachers, Pope Leo, whatnot. But day-to-day, person-to-person evangelization, if it's not taking place through the laity, then we are losing out on 99.9% of our capacity to evangelize, right? So, and this is something that I think as Catholics we need to constantly dig into. Doesn't mean you have to get on a soapbox on the street corner and be preaching and saying, hey, sinner, convert! You know, obviously that doesn't really convert a whole lot of people. It just makes you look like an idiot. But evangelization is going to take place in day-to-day relationships, in the way that we love, in the way that we are honest. And yes, there are going to be plenty of times when the opportunity arises not to be afraid to share the faith about Christ with people. You know, imagine being in a Jewish context, and these early Christians had no qualms about going around and talking about Jesus, which was pretty revolutionary stuff. So there's a lot that we can learn from them. This is part of the way God made the church. This is not just some exceptional period. This is God's plan. You are called to be the first evangelists in culture. Number three, which is kind of the counterweight to that, is we see that, you know, because of the persecution, people got spread out and they went all over the place and started preaching about Jesus. And in Antioch, things started picking up because they started preaching to pagans. I'm not even going to get into that. Okay, quick note. Yes, the church is universal and not only for Jewish people. I think we know that because I don't believe there are any Jewish people in the church right now. And we are all Catholic, therefore, okay, we got that. But the interesting thing is the church, immediately when they found out that there's something exciting happening in Antioch. What happens? People tell him about it, but this is where church authority steps in. And it is not to put the clamps on anybody, but they sent and they got St. Barnabas. Now, I actually did a little research because I was actually, it doesn't actually say that St. Barnabas ever was ordained a bishop. I think he probably was, but even, you know, with some searches using various search engines and whatnot, there is a church tradition that St. Barnabas was the first bishop of Milan, but it's actually not, you know, it came much later. So, I mean, the presumption in my mind is always that St. Barnabas was an ordained bishop, but frankly speaking, there's not a lot of certitude. But he was an authority sent by the church in Jerusalem on their behalf. Somebody, he was a sense magisterium, coming in order to make sure and to safeguard and to protect the purity of doctrine, and also to encourage them, as the Acts of the Apostles says, and to encourage, you know, help them keep going, right? So what we see is a church that begins through the evangelization of lay people, but goes and gets clergy. And St. Paul, we know, definitely was a bishop. He was an apostle. Kind of curiously, he was ordained directly by Christ, not even by the hands of any human being. He was kind of an exception out there. But and St. Barnabas goes and gets St. Paul. So you see the clergy and the laity working together and this church flourishing. And I think what this paints is the picture of a church that has the same logic in many regards as a family. Now, it's not a perfect analogy because kids grow up and then they are no longer subject to their parents. But as a good parent, your job is not to perpetually direct your children. Your job is to obviously direct and guide your children when they're young, but our job is to prepare our children to go out into society as mature adults and to flourish. And a parent's glory is when their children grow up and to become good, solid young men and women who are faithful and honest and hardworking and religious, etc., and go out and flourish in society and their own, create beautiful families and whatnot. And there's nothing, I think, that as a grandparent that you love more than to watch, than the pride that you have in seeing your children becoming the kind of men and women you wanted them to be. So the churches, the clergy and the hierarchy, that's kind of what our glory is too. To give guidance, to give the means, to give the formation necessary so that lay Catholics can go out and flourish. But just like, as long as a child is actually living under your roof, this is where the analogy crumbles a little bit, because kids do grow up and leave their parents' houses, at least unless you live in certain countries. In Europe, you sometimes wonder if that's the case. And nonetheless, as long as the kids, for example, are teenagers, they're living under your roof, yes, you want them to have autonomy and you want to see them flourish, but there are going to be moments when you have to correct and you have to discipline and you have to create, you know, impose boundaries and whatnot. And that is also, this is what the magisterium, this is what the hierarchy in the church is all about. So I think there's a lot of beauty in this first reading from the Acts of the Apostles, and it's worth a little meditation and asking myself, okay, if this is my role, how am I about evangelizing and doing apostolate? Father, Son, Holy Spirit.